What's up, guys? Remember the last time when I talked about the crazy 5-day holiday? Well, after that, we go to school for 2 days, and then it's Saturday again. So yesterday, we decided to bake some cookies. This isn't the first time that Emily and I baked cookies all by ourselves, but it is a little messy. The recipe was a little strange. For example, it's said to add 84 grams of sugar, and after we saw how much that was, we decided to cut it down to 70 grams. Flour, 150 grams, was also a lot, and the bowl we poured it into was way too small, so flour spilled everywhere. The first thing we did was pour the egg into the butter and mix them up, but it looked very different from the pictures on the recipe. The butter was smushed into bits and floating around, so we went back to see what was wrong. It turns out we missed step one, which was to mix the sugar and butter together first, so now our dough looked super weird. But it turned out all right in the end. Before putting the shaped cookies in the oven, we decided not to follow the recipe and put some marshmallows on some of them to add that special flavor. I pointed out that they might melt into water, but we took that risk and did it anyway. Sure enough, there were only bits of marshmallow left by the time the cookies were fully baked. We tasted them, and it was a little too bitter. It's probably because we didn't add the required 14 grams of sugar. Dumbarton by Ginger Juan. Chapter 2. Nobody thought it was that a big deal to talk to the Kellers, but it was to me. Mrs. Miriam already hated me, and now she was going to hate me more. But we all agreed, there was no turning back now. I needed to do it. I sighed and threw the straw in the trash. "Come on, guys, let's go for Plan A," I said, acting casually like nothing happened. "I'll rip all the pictures on the walls. Miss Miriam is so dead." The others went around the first floor and started messing things up. Some of them were pulling the cushions away from the chairs and throwing them to the floor. Some were in the kitchen splashing water around. Some were in the living room cutting the new curtains with scissors. I ripped all of the pictures on the walls and started throwing the tableware off the table. Monica came up to me and poured some water onto the table. I heard footsteps coming downstairs. "They're coming," I declared, my voice enough for the others to hear, but too quiet for the Kellers and Mrs. Miriam. We all settled down at the dining table again and stared blankly ahead. "And this is the first floor," Mrs. Miriam said. "I like keeping the house clean. It has a good influence on the children." Her voice trailed off, seeing the mess. Mr. and Mrs. Keller looked around the first floor and glared at Mrs. Miriam. "What was it you were telling us about keeping the house clean?" Mr. Keller said grimly. "The upstairs was quite impressive," Mrs. Keller said. "Very tidy, but downstairs, not so much." Mrs. Miriam gulped. "It wasn't like this when you first came here, was it?" she blubbered. "The children must have messed it up." "And why would they do that?" Mr. Keller raised an eyebrow at Mrs. Miriam. "The only thing I remember when I first came in is the children were well behaved," Mrs. Keller said. "This house is filthy. It isn't good for the children." Mrs. Miriam was speechless. Her mouth dropped open and shut as if she were trying to speak, but no words came out. Mr. and Mrs. Keller exchanged looks and both wrote something on their clipboards. "Now we shall interview the children," Mrs. Keller said, looking up from her clipboard. "Yes, we need to know what they think of the Orange Star Orphanage," Mr. Keller said. I knew from his tone that Mrs. Miriam gave him a bad impression. I chuckled to myself. Interviewing all of us would certainly make Mrs. Miriam look worse to the Kellers than she already did. Please, if you are ready, just enter the living room and we shall start the interview. The killers walked into the living room and sat down on the couch. Monica had a devious smirk on her face. I'm going in first, she said. Mrs. Merriam had her head down. She quickly went into her room and slammed the door. Monica laughed. She will soon pay for the way she treats us. She trotted over to the living room and flopped down on the couch next to the killers, and they started asking her questions. Monica had her smile on for the whole time. Mr. and Mrs. Keller were planning to leave at 1 in the afternoon. Right after we finished our lunches, only two other kids hadn't been interviewed yet, including me. I decided to go in last and taint Mrs. Merriam's name. The time had come. The last child came back from the living room, and I walked inside after him. Mr. and Mrs. Keller motioned for me to sit down. I did. Hi, Avery. Hi, I'm Avery, I said. Avery Gray? You're Avery Gray? Ah, yes, I remember you, Mr. Keller said. I suddenly realized that he was the one who walked me to the Orange Star Orphanage on the first night. Now, Avery, are you happy here? I couldn't help but smile. Actually, Mrs. Merriam has been very unkind to us, I replied. Mrs. Keller nodded her head, a thoughtful look on her face. Every child has given a negative response, she said to Mr. Keller. This is a problem. The others have said that Mrs. Merriam only repaired the house because of our visit. Is that true? Mr. Keller asked me. I nodded my head. Oh, yes. The house was even more filthy than it already is now before you came here. That is not good to hear, Mrs. Keller said, writing something down on her clipboard. They asked a few more questions, and I did my best to say the worst things about Mrs. Merriam. Then they walked me out of the living room. Mrs. Merriam was nowhere to be seen. I guess that she was still in her room. Everyone had their eyes on us. Pretend we aren't here, Mrs. Keller said. Mr. Keller and I are going to sit back and watch your daily life now. Go on, do your thing. They turned and looked for something for them to sit on, but there was nothing. I pushed two stools to them, but they were too small. They sat uncomfortably on them and watched us have lunch. I once again sat down in my seat. A bowl of salad lay before me, along with a bowl of tomato soup, some bread on the side, a plate of mashed potatoes, and something so fancy I didn't recognize. Mrs. Merriam must have set the table up when I was doing my interview. I picked up my fork and tried the mashed potatoes. There was butter in them, and it felt soft in my mouth. I never thought Mrs. Merriam was such a good cook. The Kellers just sat there and wrote on their clipboard every once in a while. I tried my best to eat as politely as possible, but it was hard when the feast was lying in front of me. The others also gobbled down their food, and in less than 10 minutes, we all finished. Monica was licking her plate clean. Caleb was sucking on his fingers to make sure there was nothing left for him to eat. I chewed on the fork, imagining the delicacy I just tasted, wishing I could go back in time to when the food was still there. But this was the last meal before the Kellers had to leave, and I would never have a meal so tasty again in my life. And as soon as they leave, Mrs. Merriam would come out of her room. There was no saying what she was going to do to us. It was probably going to be worse than I thought. The Kellers stood up. We will now report our findings to the child care agency, and we will let you know the results later on, Mr. Keller said, walking to the door. There may be some changes, both big and small, when the results are out, but don't worry. We will only make your lives better, Mrs. Keller said reassuringly. Please inform Mrs. Merriam that we will give notice of the results next Tuesday. She nodded as a goodbye, and they walked out of the house. I waved at them as they went, glad I wasn't the only one who had to speak to them about Mrs. Merriam, even though we drew straws. How do you think Mrs. Merriam will react? Monica asked me. I shrugged. We're about to find out. The door to Mrs. Merriam's room swung open. She stood there, staring at us. My heart started racing faster. I was afraid she was going to pounce like a beast. "How dare you!" she screamed. "My career is over because of you children." "I thought you don't even like us," Monica said. "I don't," Mrs. Merriam said. "But at least I get money." I saw that Monica was about to say something back, but I stopped her. I didn't want things to get any worse. "Don't. She will soon regret treating us this way. Mr. and Mrs. Keller will take care of us." "Yes, yes, they will." The days dragged by very slowly. Mrs. Merriam had been as mean as ever, especially to me. In just 3 days, she had already done countless things to make my life more miserable than it already was. On Saturday, she made me clean all the dirty dishes, even though there wasn't that many since we only ate a little every day. On Sunday, she ordered me to clean the bathrooms for no specific reason. Monday, she didn't give me anything to eat for lunch because she claimed to have run out of food. It was 6:45 on Monday, almost time for dinner. Monica and I were jumping rope in the front lawn while the others were playing tag. "You guys want to join us? This game is getting intense," a voice called to us. "No thanks, I'm tired," I replied. "I'm tired and starving." I had been jumping rope nonstop, going so fast Monica couldn't catch up with me. The rope was a blur as Monica swung it around and around. Although we had been doing this for more than 6 months, every time I played, she would still stare at me in awe, just like how I stared at her when she was telling stories. We admired each other in our own ways. Monica stopped swinging the rope and sighed, walking to me and patting me on the back. "Everything will be fine, Avery," she said, comforting me. "Mrs. Merriam is eventually going to stop treating you differently." She handed me the jump rope. "Your turn." "But I don't understand why," I said with my head down, starting to swing the rope. "It's been almost 7 months. I'm not new here anymore," Monica shrugged while jumping up and down, her ponytail bouncing as she jumped. "Mrs. Merriam doesn't like change, but the Kellers are going to tell us about the results tomorrow. You only have to survive one more night. I know they're going to make our lives better." I stopped swinging as I heard Mrs. Merriam's shout from the kitchen. "Dinner time!" Monica and I walked into the house along with the others, who were all sweaty and out of breath. We settled down at the table. Caleb had a very red face. His dark hair was damp and stuck to his face. I loved playing tag because my parents used to say that I was a born athlete and I could outrun anyone in the orphanage. Dinner was awful as usual. Mine looked even more awful than the others. Mrs. Merriam didn't join us for dinner tonight. She was in her room. She must be so nervous, I thought to myself. The Kellers had surely reported something horrible about Mrs. Merriam. What they're going to say tomorrow might be worse than she thinks. For the rest of the night, Mrs. Merriam didn't show up. We all took turns showering and went to bed. Monica turned off the lights at exactly 10:30, but none of us were able to sleep. We were too excited. Tomorrow may be the day our lives turn around. "Want to finish the game of tag?" Caleb suggested after a while. "Mrs. Merriam surely won't find out." We all scrambled to the window and looked down at the front lawn. Monica went over to the cabinet in the corner of the room and pulled out a long rope made of pillowcases. She went over to the windowsill and tied the rope onto a nail sticking out. It was not thick, but strong enough to hold one child at a time. I closed the drawer behind her. It was the drawer for spare pillowcases and blankets. Mrs. Merriam claimed to have washed them before she placed them into the cabinet, but I wasn't so sure. The blankets always smelled strange. Caleb tied the curtains to the side of the window so that it wouldn't block our view. Without a word, I grabbed the end of the rope and jumped out of the window, landing safely on my feet. It was my job to go down first and check if it was safe, since I was the best athlete. The others always said that it was sad that my skills weren't put to a good use. I saw several children poking out their heads out the window and watching me. The rope was just long enough to reach from the second floor to the lawn. It dangled there, not even touching the grass. I tugged the rope to make sure it wasn't loose and motioned for the others to come down. Caleb was the first one to go. He slid down the rope, which seemed like it was going to snap any second, and when he was almost to the ground, he leaped down and lost his balance, rolling onto the grass. "You make it look so easy," he muttered, pushing himself up and brushing the dust off his body. "I never take credit for my talents," I said, bobbing a curtsy. Monica was the last one down. It was the most difficult part. I needed to climb back to the second floor. Mrs. Miriam always locked the doors and windows before nighttime, just to prevent us from sneaking out at night when she was sleeping. But luckily, we were smarter than her. I guess she didn't think I could jump down a two-story building, land safely on the ground, climb back up, and then jump down again. "You're it," Monica said with a playful push. I was always it when the game started, since nobody could catch me, and sometimes I wanted to be it too. I ran toward Caleb, who was the closest to me, and tagged him. "Why?" he groaned. I got him so quickly he barely had time to move. After a few minutes, Caleb finally managed to tag another person who had tripped on a rock before he caught her. Caleb wasn't a great athlete. He always seemed to be jealous of my abilities. "How are you so fast?" For the rest of the game, I didn't get caught once. I tried to take my mind off the killers, and watching my friends struggle to run faster totally did it. I had completely forgotten about them until the game was over. We all laid on the grass, feeling the cool breeze blow against our hot faces. I wasn't really tired because of the game. I was exhausted because we were playing tag in the front lawn at midnight, when we should have been sleeping. The anxiousness of what the changes the killers meant once again crept up on me, and I rolled over, my face on the grass and dirt. "What are you doing, Avery?" Monica asked, with a chuckle, seeing me face down on the ground. "Starving and eating dirt?" The others laughed, but I didn't. "I'm worried about tomorrow," I said, my voice muffled. A chunk of dirt got into my mouth, and I pushed myself up quickly, spitting it out. The grass was moist and tasted disgusting. Monica made a face at me. She made me laugh too. "Well, stop worrying," she gave me a playful punch on the shoulder. "Who knows? Great things could happen tomorrow. Life-changing things." "You don't know that. Not for sure you don't," I said. "Bad things might happen. What if they put someone even meaner than Mrs. Miriam in charge? What if that person hates me even more than Mrs. Miriam does?" Miss Monica's smile became a frown. I could see that she was starting to see the dark side of the situation, too. I knew we should think positively, but positivity isn't always the answer. My way of thinking was negative, yet it was practical. "I guess we'll see," she finally said after a long thought, her expression solemn. I got up on my feet. "I'm exhausted. Want to go to bed?" Everyone agreed. We were all very tired. I hurried back to the wall and looked up. The second floor window looked so far away, and the curtains had come loose and were flapping around. Without hesitation, I grabbed the rope and started climbing. The rope swung around. I concentrated on getting to the window and not looking down. "Do you need us to hold the end of the rope so it won't keep swinging?" Monica called up to me. The others shushed her, and she lowered her voice. "It looks dangerous." "I can handle it," I said, and kept on climbing. I was almost to the window when I heard a shout. "Hey, what's going on here?" A girl yelped. I was alarmed and lost my grip on the rope. Monica screamed as I fell, but I seized the rope again before I hit the ground. "Avery, jump down," Monica yelled. My heart was pounding hard from the scare. I took a deep breath and let go of the rope, leaping to the ground. Monica ran to me and hugged me tightly around the neck. I looked up at the person who startled me and almost had me killed. It was the old man who lived across from the Orange Star Orphanage. He stood outside, behind the front gate. He was friends with Mrs. Merriam, but he didn't know about her dark side. "Why were you climbing on the wall?" he screeched, waving his walking stick in the air. "Please don't tell Mrs. Merriam," Caleb pleaded. "She cannot know about this." "Why were you climbing on the wall?" the man asked again sternly, this time slowly. His voice was cold and sent chills down my spine. We exchanged glances. He would certainly tell Mrs. Merriam about this. We had to make up a fake excuse to get him to keep quiet. "Mrs. Merriam told us to clean the chimney," I said, smiling at him politely, the way I always did to my grandparents. It made them happy just by seeing it on all occasions. "She said we must finish our chores before we go to sleep, but we've been playing all evening. Now we have to clean it, or else Mrs. Merriam will be angry that we didn't finish our chores before we go to bed, like she said." We all stared at the old man. His bald head glistened under the moonlight and made me want to laugh, but I kept a smile on my face and waited to see his reaction. "All right, you are good children," the man said at last. "Next time, don't delay until so late. Be careful, children." We said goodbye and thanked him, and after he was out of sight, sighed in relief. "Phew, that was close," Caleb said. "Thanks to Avery, or else we would all be dead when Mrs. Merriam found out," Mrs. Monica said, patting me on the back. "Do you think he bought it?" I asked. "I think so," Monica replied, "but we have to hope that he wouldn't mention that we were cleaning the chimney at midnight to Mrs. Merriam." I nodded. "Let's go to bed." Once again, I held onto the rope and climbed. Monica clenched onto the other end of it to prevent it from swinging. I reached the windowsill and pulled myself up, rolling inside to the bedroom safely. I caught my breath and untied the rope from the nail. Since the others couldn't climb up a wall with just a rope made of spare pillowcases, I had to pull them up. The first person must be the one who weighs the least. Caleb twirled the rope around his arms and legs and nodded at me. I pushed my foot against the wall and leaned backward, pulling the rope up. The rope began rising outside, and I staggered back, my steps slow and unsteady. Eventually, I could see Caleb's curly hair through the window. He grabbed the windowsill and pulled himself up, practically crawling into the room. His forehead was covered with beads of sweat, even though I was the one who was pulling. He stood up and let the rope fall to the ground. I lowered it back out the window, and Caleb helped me pull the next person up. Soon the last person was up, and it was almost 2 a.m. I was weary and worn out as I lay down in my bed on top of my blanket because I was perspiring and hot. The others climbed into bed and fell asleep in no time. I heard snoring after less than a minute. As the gentle breath of wind whisked across my burning face, I began to drift off to sleep. Tuesday. I sat up in my bed and gasped for breath. Everyone was still sleeping. I saw that I had woken up in a pool of sweat. Mr. and Mrs. Keller were coming today. Today may be the day all my nightmares end, or it might be the day it all starts. Breakfast time came faster than I expected. I finished it faster than anybody else. Mrs. Merriam finally came out of her room and joined us. Her expression was complicated and I couldn't read it. I stared anxiously at the front door, expecting a knock any second. There were butterflies in my stomach and I felt like they were about to fly out from my mouth and choke me to death. My lips were quivering and I couldn't control it. I squeezed the handle of my chair tightly until my knuckles turned white. Then I heard a crackling sound. At first, I thought it was the Kellers arriving at the doorsteps, but it wasn't. I looked down at my hand. It was bleeding. The handle of my chair was splintered. I somehow broke it just by squeezing it. Just when I was confused, there was a knock on the door. I jumped up and rushed to the door. "I'll get it," I called out to Mrs. Merriam before she could even stand up from her chair. I stood on tiptoes and looked at the people. There, standing straight and tall, were Mr. and Mrs. Keller. I turned the knob and swung the door open. They seemed to be startled by the suddenness. "Hello, Avery," Mr. Keller said. "May we come in?" "Sure," I said quickly, holding the door open for them. They walked inside. "Well, what's the result?" Monica asked. Mr. and Mrs. Keller sighed. "Let's talk about the changes," she started. "First of all, we will repair the Orange Star Orphanage as soon as possible. We will fix the splintered wood, broken glass, also install new sinks and toilets, bathtubs, and all that needs to be replaced." I ran to Monica and slapped her a high five. I guessed she was right to say this was the day our lives would turn around. The other children seemed to be excited as well. "Second, we will support the Orange Star Orphanage financially so you can go shopping for new clothing," Mr. Keller continued. "Look at what you're wearing now, so filthy." "And also," she inhaled heavily, "we were going to replace your guardian, Mrs. Merriam." Mrs. Keller glanced at Mrs. Merriam. She looked sulky and embarrassed. "But unfortunately, there are no replacements found in the child care agency. I'm afraid your children need to stick with Mrs. Merriam until we find you a new guardian." The smile on my face disappeared and turned into a frown. I couldn't help but imagine what if they never found a replacement. "We'll be stuck with Mrs. Merriam forever," I thought, falling into my chair. "We'll have to sneak around in order to do things that are fun for the rest of our lives." "There's another thing," Mr. Keller said. "Since several children mentioned in the interviews that Mrs. Merriam was treating Avery Gray unfairly, we have found Avery an adoptive father." I was frozen. My mind suddenly went blank, like my memories had all been erased. My mouth dropped open. I felt like the butterflies in my stomach were flying around in agitation, punching me from the inside. My head ached crazily. "Excuse me?" Monica exclaimed. "Yes, little girl. Avery will soon leave the Orange Star Orphanage and move in with her adoptive father," Mrs. Keller said assuringly. "We believe it is better for her this way. Her adoptive father is a kind man, and he is actually very wealthy. I think Avery will enjoy being with him." But I don't want to leave," I stammered, finally managing to speak. "I don't want to leave my friends behind." "Don't worry, Avery. You'll make many new friends in your new neighborhood and your new school," Mr. Keller said. He bent down until he was eye level with me. "I know you'll like your adoptive father very much. Avery, I know you're stressed now, but you think you don't want to leave?" Mrs. Keller said. "But deep down inside, you really do." "I really don't," I cried, standing up from my chair. "I want to stay with all my friends." The Kellers shook their heads. "Take some time to think about it, Avery," Mrs. Keller said as Mr. Keller started out the door. "We'll come pick you up to meet your adoptive father tomorrow. By then, we expect you to have your luggage packed, goodbye said and ready at the door." After that, she shut the door behind her.